Blog Talk Radio.
Interrupt our program to bring you this important message.
Welcome, friends, brothers and sisters in Jesus Christ, and seekers of the truth. But whoever you are, I know that we all share one thing in common. Don't we all want to know the truth? The truth about what's really going on here in this crazy, chaotic, upside-down world. Well, welcome to the 582nd edition of SDG. And by the way, folks, SDG stands for Solely for the Glory of God. And the title of today's message is Endgame Update Number 46. And a bit later in this message, we're going to all tie it in to remaining hopeful. You know, that's so important to do in this chaotic and confusing world. The Bible says in Proverbs chapter 13, verse 12, hope that is deferred afflicts the soul. So I hope you stay tuned to learn how we can have the deepest godly longings of our hearts fulfilled, which, folks, quite literally is the tree of life. And I have a very interesting tie-in to a symbol that's used every holiday season, and that's the Christmas tree. Whatever you may think about it, folks, I'm going to tie it all into that. Bottom line, though, is as believers, we may be in this world, but we're not of this world. And as God's people, what are we doing, folks? We're just passing through. So let's all refuse to be destroyed by this Luciferian all-out war on humanity, and stay tuned to find out the latest news, the forbidden truth that the mainstream media will never tell you or me, as we dive deeper and deeper into America's new 9/11 events, which are unfolding in slow motion while on steroids. And like I say, folks, how did it get started? We all know, folks. It was that lab-engineered, media-manipulated coronavirus heist. And as we do every week, folks, before we get into our news update, let's review something from last week's episode. Now, just last week, folks, let's say this. Over the past month or so, I've been talking a lot about Kanye West. Now, he first entered the scene in a big way back in 2018 when he started to call out the Democrats in politics for their disingenuous rhetoric concerning the blacks. No big deal. Then he spoke out on China and their slave labor practices. You know, he's into clothing and garments, and he's toured those factories, and he knows what slave labor is. Again, no big deal. But then something strange happened. And I don't know if you know where this is going, but he uttered those two words that Dave Chappelle told us so much about. And do you remember what those two words were?
Early in my career, I learned that there are two words in the English language that you should never say together in sequence. And those words are the and juice. I've never heard someone do good after they said that.
Now, you know, we laugh about it, folks. There's really something there. Because as soon as he did that, as soon as Kanye started to talk about the Jews, all hell broke loose, and his billionaire status was reduced to that of a mere mega millionaire, but who's counting? You remember when Kanye was on Chris Cuomo's show, and he got the pushback from good old Chris when he entered that realm of Dave Chappelle, and the warning that he gave us concerning the two words that you should never utter together? The Jews? Let's just remember how that went down with Chris Cuomo.
Finish what I'm saying.
I know, but you have to understand this idea of the Jewish media. That's not how it works. You're talking to me right now.
La, 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 la. So every celebrity,
go ahead.
Every celebrity has
Jewish people in their contract. This is not hate speech. This is the truth. And these people, if you say anything out of the line with the agenda, then your career could be over.
Listen, so I hear you. You've made that point.
Why are you cutting off my point?
Because the point is...
Because why do you keep...
Here's why.
Don't cut me off, sir. Respect my
I've
point.
Listened to
respect,
it. You've made it several times.
I'm not finished, sir.
I understand, but
I'm
you've said
finished,
it
sir.
Several times.
I'm not
and
finished,
it
sir.
Is an
but my
ugly
people
thought.
Haven't heard me. My people, they
people
need to
heard
hear.
You.
They need to hear me saying out loud what the truth is. There's a bunch of people in Hollywood that are actors, that play basketball, that play sports, that are in music, that know what I'm saying, that feel what I'm saying, and they're happy that I'm saying what I'm saying. It's not from a place of anti-Semitism.
That is
some of
inherently
my best friends are Jewish,
anti-Semitic.
And I'm also Jewish.
And if they're your friends,
some of my best,
if they're
why
your
are
friends,
you talking over me, bro?
Because
you're
I'm trying to correct what you're
out.
Saying that is
no, it's not
damaging to decency.
No, yo, but you can't talk over me. You can't
well,
talk
then
over
stop
me.
Stop and give me a chance to make the point that you need
no,
to listen to.
Don't cut off. I need to make a clear point. When am I allowed to make a point that you don't
You've
cut me off?
You've been talking overwhelmingly during this segment. Yeah, you know, I'm
well,
happy to give
me.
You the time, but
no, you're not. No, you're not.
Well, I can't just give you. I can't give you unrestricted license to attack Jewish people
exactly.
and say that
I'm
they're your
attacking.
Friends because
I'm not attacking
that's
Jewish
anti-Semitic.
People.
And it's
okay.
dangerous.
Are you going to give me a platform? Are you going to give me a platform?
I am giving you a platform, but
okay,
I listen.
Okay, wait. So you talk and tell me when I can get my eyes.
All right, good.
All
right after through. I ask you this, I'll give you the rest of the time before you go. Here's my all concern right. for you. When I hear how you talk about your personal life and you put things out there and you get into these looping thoughts of what you believe, it sounds to me like you are sometimes out of control and that this is something that you should be dealing with. Now, I'm not excusing your thoughts as illness, okay? People attacked me for that and said, hey.
I am so sorry, folks. I had my microphone muted. But you know what comes to mind when I hear that kind of pushback from a host? Well, that one line. Out of Shakespeare. Where was it? Hamlet? The lady doth protesteth too much, methinks. You got to wonder why. But before we get any deeper into this, folks, a disclaimer. Once again, it's time for that disclaimer. Folks, I am not anti-Semitic, whatever that implies, nor am I racist, nor do I support the politics of Hitler. Just wanted to get that on record, okay, folks? Just want to get that on record. Now, I want you to all know I'm merely a truth seeker. And the entire topic of this politically incorrect term, the Jews, to have the light of truth shed upon it. And there's a reason for this. And as we go through these next two clips, I hope you see why. Now, just last week, this comes out. And this came from Brother Alex. So thank you, Brother Alex. But this is Nick Fuentes. You know, he's been getting a bad rap, too. And, again, I don't support Nick, but I do support his right to speak freely. So Nick was on the Alex Jones Show, and he was talking about some topics concerning these forbidden words, the Jews. Let's just have a listen and then a few thoughts on it afterwards.
Bill Gates, the WEF, and, you know, this stuff. But, that, you know, we're over here with the Jews. The WEF and the big corporations, the New World Order and Xi Jinping are mass murdering people, are bringing in tyranny and lockdowns and world IDs and controls. And whether they're Chinese or whether they're German or Jewish, I'm just opposing these tyrannical objectives. And I kind of want a big tent for all of that. And I just think it's a First Amendment, but I do think it's dangerous to then sit there and just invoke all of this and say that Jews are the powerful Jewish mafias who basically run the world. I mean, is that what you're saying?
Yes, and I think they do. I don't even think it's really disputed anymore after what happened to Ye and that clip that you played with Greenblatt from the ADL. Look at him. I mean, he was somebody who even in 2018, 4 years ago, was saying things that are regarded as politically incorrect. And people throw that around. They say, well, that's politically incorrect, like it's this, you know, broad, nebulous thing. It's actually very specific. he said like partisan conservative talking points in 18, and he was just fine. And he went on Tucker Carlson, and he called out China and called out a lot of things, and he was just fine. Then he switched up on the Jews. He was banned from Fox News. He was banned from Daily Wire. And, you know, I don't have to go through the whole list, but we've all seen the cascading effect of this. Adidas deal cut, Gap deal cut. His bank froze tens of millions of dollars. You know, I mean, it's unbelievable. If that doesn't prove it. And then the ADL is going around now, and they're not just fundraising, but they're passing out a letter in Congress, and they're demanding that nobody give him a platform. They're getting him kicked off Twitter. It goes on and on and on. And so I don't even think it's even in dispute anymore that Jews have a and, you know, maybe you would qualm about whether it's all of the power or just like a lot of it or a majority of it. But it's true that there are these Jew and there are Jewish groups, Republican Jewish Congress, Zionist Organization of America, ADL. These are all Jewish groups. World Jewish Congress called for Apple and Spotify. And you know, that's kind of like asking a question in itself. What is the World Jewish Congress? Did you know that the State Department's definition of anti-Semitism says that if you believe that Jews conspire on a global level, that you're an anti-Semite? Well, then how?
That was classic, folks. So much information. So much information came out on that. For example, when Alex said, so you think a powerful Jewish mafia runs the world. Is this correct? And then Nick just says, well, yes. Oh, and by the way, folks, what is the World Jewish Congress? Well, more on that and the politics of Zionism in general in the Back of the Future segment. Now, just a few days later after this bombshell from Alex, he sends me another. And this is a clip from the Tim Pool podcast. And Tim Pool, you're exposing yourself. Now, this is his host, Ian, his co-host, Ian. And just have a listen to Ian, who's a Jew, talking about the infighting concerning Kanye right now. And he says one thing in particular. Kanye will be looked at as someone who saved the Jews. And when he says that, if you watch the actual video, it looks like good old Timmy is about to implode. He's controlled opposition, folks. Have a listen to the truth that Tim's co-host Ian says in these 2 short minutes.
Crazy as it is it? Kanye's waking up a bunch of Jewish people and pointing them to God. Like last night on that Gavin McGinnis interview, I'll explain it. Gavin was like, I don't
know about that one, Ian.
Yeah, Gavin's like, because Nick was saying, oh, there's a cabal, or they were saying there's a cabal of people that are preventing Kanye from, you know, getting to another echelon of wealth or whatever. There's a cabal, and Kanye's like, it's the Jewish people. And Gavin was like, I don't think they're Jewish. If you don't believe in God, you're not Jewish. And it's something I said last week, too. So, Gavin, if you're listening, hell yeah, dude, nice one. And it's true. And
No. That's not true.
Let me finish, please.
I understand, but I want to, if you make a point, just explain. If you make, 12 points in a row, we can't address all of them. It's called the Gishgallop. So you said a few things right now that I think need to be addressed. One, you can be ethnically Jewish and not religious.
Yeah, well, I think you need a different word for that.
Okay, well, that's an important thing to make to
It's like saying the word means two different things. It's nonsense. The word means something. What does the word mean? What does Jewish mean?
Okay.
Let's define it and move on. You know, maybe two definitions.
You can say religiously or you can say ethnically then, right?
Well, I'm just talking about the word. What does the word mean? Let's be specific. The word means that you're Jewish, meaning what? That you're a Jew, meaning what?
That you
believe in God. That's a tenet of Judaism. That's like the tenet.
I'm pretty sure we have people here who are ethnically Jewish.
Their parents were. Like, if your great-great-grandparents were Jewish, then that doesn't mean that you are. You got to believe in it. It's a process. It's like an understanding. My thoughts are that what's going to happen is people are realizing, like, if you're fallen, if you're a fallen Jew, if you've, like, no longer believe in this and you're just this atheist taking advantage of people, you're going to realize that God is great. It's like it's there for all of us. We're all in this together. And I think that what's happening is there's going to be a revelation within Judaism and probably all the major religions on earth that there's going to be some sort of a transformation where people come back to the faith. And Kanye will be looked at as someone that saved the Jews.
A reformation?
Yeah.
I just have to say,
how?
Ian.
Because he returned them to God.
I think this may be one of the most insane things I've ever heard you
sure.
say.
I love the way Ian just said, sure. Yeah, sure. Sure. And this Gishgal? Tim Pool's guilty of that. So right after he tells Ian, you got to back up, he just rattles off 10 things and doesn't allow Ian to address any of them. So But what I have to say to Ian is exactly, brother, right on. And here's why I say that. What does the word Jewish mean? Well, I have a way I like to differentiate it, and I've talked about it on the show in the past. I use the term Hebrews when I'm referring to the religion. I refer to the term Jews for ethnicity. And then there are two subgroups, the Ashkenazi and the Sephardic. It's nothing but historical facts, folks. And then there's their politics. And the people who embrace the politics of the Jew, be they ethnic or religious Jews or Hebrews, they're Zionists. And their politics is Zionism. And I think it's time for one more disclaimer, folks. I am not anti-Semitic. I'm all in for truth and transparency. And this topic concerning these two politically incorrect words, the Jews, need some light shed upon it. But we have to keep moving. And right now, it's time for our freaky deaky news update with Sister Kathy and Brother Alex. And as we do every single week, folks, let's get started with our coronavirus heist update. And there's a lot of mind control, isn't there, folks? So as we've been doing for the last several months, let's open up with our sudden adult death syndrome update. The co-founder of a leading animal rescue organization out in Los Angeles, you know, that's probably so popular because a lot of the celebrities like to adopt these homeless dogs. So Chad Atkins, the co-founder of this well-known animal rescue out in L.A., he dies suddenly of heart failure, 44 years old. Now, the organization confirmed that his death was, in fact, heart failure. And again, doctors are baffled, but of course, there's good money in remaining baffled if you're a doctor wearing one of those white lab coats while looking at the truth straight in the face and saying, I don't see anything. You know, that phrase, dies like flies, has been coming to mind for me a lot lately, folks, and it reminds me of something I read decades ago in my first Bible, which was the NIV, the 1984 edition, I think it was, or 81. Now, it's out of Isaiah 51, verse 6, and I'd like to read it out of that rendering. Now, in the King James, it says, the earth's inhabitants shall die in like manner. And like I've said over the years, I usually don't cite the NIV or any other translation anymore. But here's what the NIV says. Lift up your eyes to the heavens. Look at the earth beneath. The heavens will vanish like smoke. The earth will wear out like a garment, and its inhabitants die like flies. But my salvation will last forever. My righteousness will never fail. Now, I know that's a bit out of context with regard to the sudden deaths, but that whole Isaiah chapter 51 was written for today, folks. And here's how it starts. Listen to me, you who pursue righteousness, you who seek the Lord. Look to the rock from which were cut, from which you were cut. Now that's Abram. And the quarry, or the pit, his wife Sarah, the mother of Isaac and the grandmother of Jacob, also known as Israel, folks, from which you were hewn. Anyways, just saying, Isaiah 51, it's worth a read, folks. And one more SADS report before we keep moving. Grant Wall died suddenly and tragically this week, and that's all anyone in the media is supposed to say about it. Now, Grant Wall is a prominent soccer journalist. He has close to a million Twitter followers and a huge Substack account. And you may have heard he collapsed and died while covering the World Cup match in Qatar late on December 9th. And his death became instantly a subject of international controversy after his brother suggested that perhaps he was murdered because of his left-leaning politics. But in reality, after the autopsy, it showed that Wall had died of a ruptured aortic aneurysm. Now, everybody, including his wife, Dr. Celine Grounder, view this death as awful and tragic. And my sympathy out to the family and the friends of Grant Wall. And this ought to be a private matter, but it isn't, because he's a public figure who died suddenly. Time of his death, he was a healthy 48-year-old man. And it's unfortunate that his brother had these accusations, but in reality, that's explaining something. People are scratching their head, folks, about these unexplained sudden deaths of people under 50. But let's face it, before the scamdemic, that was rare. But Wall wasn't murdered, folks, at least not in the conventional sense of the term. Dr. Grounder disclosed on Wednesday that the autopsy conducted in New York actually revealed that it was an undiagnosed aortic aneurysm, and it had developed over time. Now, this is like a balloon in your circulatory system that just blows up and suddenly bursts, allowing the blood to rush out and destroying tissue around it. It causes death in many instances because of blood loss and the serious injury associated with it. But praise the Lord, these aortic aneurysms, they're very rare, especially in people under 50. The rate is roughly 1 in 10,000 or less. And get this, the mean age for these aneurysms is about 70, not 48. And the underlying cause may be unknown, but one condition that raises risk is what's known as giant cell arteritis. And that's an inflammation of the lining of the arteries. And oh, guess what? That's one of the side effects of the jab. Can anyone say it? He died from the jab, folks. He had to be vaccinated to be in Qatar to begin with. And he dies of this rare condition. Pieces the puzzle together, folks. Now, the doctors, mainstream that is, and the mainstream media, they won't, but I will. And folks, it's the death jab doing this. Oh, and praise the Lord, I'm not alone anymore on this. I'm not. So there's a report out from the Rasmussen group, and it came out Wednesday, December 7th, and it says, although a majority of Americans may still think the jab is effective, they're having concerns about the side effects. So this latest report from Rasmussen is just packed full of information. What I'd like to do is just play the clip for you. So I'm going to bring it up. It's Rasmussen 12. Million. Let's see if we get it here. Not coming up. I just had it. You know what I do now, folks? I cue these all up before the show, and I make sure that my little shortcuts are working. And for some reason, R-A-S-M-U, like Omer would say, Shazam. I guess we're not going to have it. I apologize for this, folks. I respect your time. And I don't like it when other podcasters do this. I'm going to try one more thing here. Here it is. 12 million people. Vaxxed Americans report major side effects and question efficacy. This is a longer clip, but I think it's valuable. So it's seven and a half minutes. Let's just listen to what Rasmussen, a normie mainstream polling association, is finding with regard to their Pulse Opinion Research Group and the thoughts of most Americans.
Concerns about COVID may have largely gone away, but what about vaccine side effects? Shouldn't someone have polled Americans about that by now? Well, we did, and the results are astounding. Now, this is a touchy topic for big tech censors, but I wanted to hopefully preempt malicious calls of disinformation with this disclaimer. I'm a pollster, not a medical researcher, and in this video, I will only be discussing questions we asked Americans and a breakdown of their responses. American public opinion is not medical disinformation. There's some extremely important information in here, so please hang on to the end of the video to make sure you get it. How effective are COVID-19 vaccines at preventing infection with the virus? 56% of Americans, a majority, say they're at least somewhat effective, and 26% say very effective. Only 19% say not at all effective. Now, beliefs do vary somewhat among demographic groups, with the biggest difference being among men, of whom 9% more than women say the vaccine is at least somewhat effective, and by age, where the 65-plus crowd is 12 points more likely than 18 to 39-year-olds to say the vaccine is very effective. But the biggest difference, without a doubt, is in the party numbers. Now, I just want you to take a moment to appreciate the insanity here. The COVID pandemic was so politicized that literally the tribal party group you belong to is essentially what dictates your views on the effectiveness of a vaccine. So here are the results. 40% of Republicans think the vaccine is at least somewhat effective, and 45% of independents, but only 16% of Republicans and 14% of independents think the vaccine is very effective. I've seen this pattern before, where independents poll like Republicans on things that involve suspicion of the mainstream narrative, but independents are also less likely to be as contrarian as Republicans. 56% of Republicans say the vaccine is not effective, but only 45% of independents. But check out Democrats. 80% say the vaccine is at least somewhat effective, and 47% say very. More than three times more than independents. Only 6% of Democrats say the vaccine is not at all effective. How concerned are you that the COVID vaccines may have major side effects? 57% are concerned, and 31% are very concerned. 40% are not concerned, and only 18% are not at all concerned. This is a vaccine that has been administered to nearly 70% of U.S. adults and billions of people across the world. But 57%, at least in the U.S., are concerned about major side effects. Women are 7 points more concerned than men, and women under 40 are even more concerned than anyone else, 69%. Adults over 65 are actually slightly less concerned than everyone else, and Hispanic adults are the most concerned by race, 6 points more than white adults, the next highest racial group. But again, here's party. 74% of Republicans are concerned, 56% of independents, but also 43% of Democrats. 12% of Republicans, 16% of independents, and 26% of Democrats are not at all concerned. So independents are closer to Democrats, and Democrats aren't as far from Republicans on this question. And Democrats are way more likely to be concerned about side effects than they are to not think the vaccine is effective. So the threat of side effects is making it through, but Democrats just aren't willing to entertain the thought of the vaccines not working. In this sample, 68% of adults say they have received a COVID-19 vaccination. Here's a list of who's most vaccinated and least vaccinated. 65-year-olds, high incomes, Democrats, and men over 40 top the list. Young people in general are least vaccinated at around 56%, but only 51% of women under 40 are vaccinated. Black adults, independents, and incomes under 30K are next lowest at 58%. Now here's an important chart. People who thought the vaccine was very effective or are not at all concerned about its safety are obviously the most vaccinated, but only 30% of people who think the vaccine is not at all effective got vaccinated, and 53% of people who think it is not very effective. But 44% of people very concerned about major side effects are vaccinated, and 69% of people at least somewhat concerned. This tells me that it's most likely people abstained from vaccination over doubts about its effectiveness, and concerns about side effects are more likely to be people who either found out after being vaccinated had a side effect or who were forced to get vaccinated despite their concerns. All right, here's the big one you've been holding on for. Of the 68% of adults who had a vaccine, do you believe you've experienced major or minor side effects? A combined 41% of vaccinated adults say they've experienced at least a minor side effect, and 7% say a major side effect. Now, we left it up to the respondent to define in their heads what constitutes a major side effect. So take a moment to think about what a major vaccine side effect would mean to you. Good, now let's do some math. According to the 2020 census, there are about 258 million adults in the U.S. And according to this poll, 175 million of them are vaccinated, with 7% having a major side effect. That means over 12 million adults in the U.S. have experienced a self-described major side effect that they attribute to the COVID-19 vaccine. That's over 11 times the reported COVID death numbers. And also note that anyone who may have died from the vaccine obviously can't tell us that in the poll. Now, doing some more math, that's nearly 72 million U.S. adults who have experienced at least a minor side effect that they attribute to the COVID vaccine. Now, those numbers are absolutely astounding. But I'm going to show you something that, to me, is even more astounding. Here are the side effect rates for all the main demographics. Does this look like it's politically driven to you? Not to me. In fact, the less politically encumbered you are, younger voters, independents, Hispanic voters, are actually reporting higher side effect rates. Democrats and Republicans are actually only 2 points apart. Though Republicans report a higher major side effect rate, they do tend to be more cantankerous. It's also important to point out that farther out in the crosstabs, even 6% of people who think the vaccine is very effective report a major side effect. So people are being pretty objective here in their reports about vaccine side effects. Okay, let's wrap this up. A majority, 56% of Americans, still think the COVID vaccines are at least somewhat effective. But if you took Democrats out of the equation, the numbers would drop to 43%, with only 15% saying they're very effective. Even more adults, however, are at least somewhat concerned about vaccine side effects, and 41% of vaccinated individuals, or about 28% of the U.S. population, have had at least a minor COVID vaccine side effect, while about 5% of our total adult population, 12 million people, report a major side effect. This is just incredibly big news. So please help us spread it by liking our video, sharing it on Twitter, and subscribing to our channel. And for fun, please post what a major side effect means to you in the comments. Thanks for watching.
So, folks, there's a lot of information there, but the takeaway, maybe I should have just cut right to the end. 5% of Americans, or 12 million people, are associating with serious side effects from the jab. That's big news, folks. Yet the media is not covering it. Their coverage is crickets. Nothing more, nothing less. And that's really the line media's mainstream methodology, or whatever you want to call it. You know, news is actually entertainment, folks. These aren't side effects. They really aren't. You know what I say? They're intended effects. They're the plan all along. Internal persistent leaky capillaries, blindness, neurological damage, cardiac damage, immune suppression leading to shingles, aggressive cancers. Remember that, folks, aggressive cancers and persistent illness. Who's getting sick now? Not the unvaccinated, those who took the jab. Plus, let's not forget strokes, heart attacks, Bell's palsy, and even sudden adult death. And the side effects for all of those out there who refused? Well, quite frankly, none. Oh, unemployment. You know, simply examining the mechanism of action prior to the rollout of these shots, and we did that on the show back in 2020, early in 2020, anyone paying attention would be able to see the risk associated with this experimental mRNA technology. There was a high level of risk for adverse effects and even deaths. It was inevitable. But we all knew the injection should be avoided. Any technology, let's face it, come on, any technology that turns your own cells into spike proteins, the pathogen itself, making you literally a virus factory, never a good idea. And praise the Lord, it's all coming out. In fact, at a recent World Health Summit, in Germany, a group called Rebel News outed some of these health officials who admitted that the COVID lockdowns were political and never based on any science. This is a five-minute clip. These are foreigners, Germans and other nationals speaking English, so it may be a bit difficult to understand. And I'm going to listen along here, and if it is, maybe we'll just cut it short. These are some bombshell admissions from global health leaders from all around the world. We've been scammed, folks.
The claim by some that this accord is an infringement of national sovereignty is quite simply wrong.
in the heat of the pandemic, most of the decisions were not based on faith, like I say, it wasn't based on faith.
Making the what?
They were just reactionary. Anything that will help.
A lot of people say that hydroxychloroquine is actually efficient for treating COVID-19. Is it true?
You know, it's in the initial instances, there are some physicians who are promoting it because they have evidence that it works for them. But you know, the qualities of clinical trials, so it didn't pass clinical trials, so scientifically you can't say it works.
Alex Alavois for Ribbon News, still surfing on the information we brought from Berlin, Germany. I am on the verge of showing you something incredible that we were able to catch during our undercover mission. We came to
I'm going to cut it short, folks. I value your time, and I'm just going to share some of the admissions from these world health officials. And thank you, Rebel News from Germany. Here's one. In the heat of the pandemic, most of the decisions were not based on science, like I said. They were just reactionary, anything that would help. So there you have plausible deniability. Well, we didn't know. Here's another one. Now, with the benefit of hindsight, we can tell that some of those decisions is not backed by science. And remember, this is their second language, English. Some of the syntax and some of the grammar may not be correct. And then this health official, Isahaku, admitted that the vaccines do not stop COVID from spreading. Last year, Pfizer claimed their vaccine reduced the spread of the virus by 90%. Don't forget that, folks. And here's what he says. The vaccines do not stop the spread of the disease. But now we know. At first, nobody knew. So it was political, yes, but we think it helped in flattening the curve as well. They think, as they destroyed the lives of tens of millions of people, as they destroyed economies around the world. Then he went on to admit no scientific basis existed for travel bans, and he used Africa as an example. And he then suggested this would not happen again because people were much more prepared. You know, folks, this is sick. And the interviewer then sought a full an incontrovertible clarification. And she said, we know that the lockdown was bad for business and bad for children. Now that we know so much information, could we do the same for the next pandemic? And then he goes on to say, no, that's not what I'm saying. A lot of decisions were not backed by science. Folks, you can't make this stuff up. It's all coming out. Let's be honest. This bioweapon was unleashed for one reason and one reason alone. They had to get rid of President Trump. Remember, there's a great battle going on between the English and the French sects of Freemasonry. And that's another secret society and subversive organization, the Masons. So as all this information starts coming out, going to become more and more difficult for the deep state to keep a lid on it. There's no way of getting around it. So they had to get rid of President Trump, and that's the English group, because the French Freemasons are in control right now. There was no other way to do it, so they had to get him out. And at this point, Joe Biden and his New World Order handlers, his entire cabinet, his appointed alphabet agency of heads like Dr. Dwarf and every blue state governor, should all be charged with crimes against humanity. So what's going on here is the English sect led by Trump didn't want to let go of their grip. This is London and the triangle with the United States and the Vatican. Now, the Vatican's starting to change tunes, and they're starting to get in bed with the atheists. You know, recently the Pope just said that anybody who has a personal relationship with Jesus can be Satan. Can you believe this crazy stuff? I'm not making this up. I'm just reading the news to you, folks. And then the newly released Twitter files are starting to prove all of this, too. It's truly the crime of the century, this whole scamdemic. But it goes deeper than just the Democrats. There are many rhino Republicans who need to be put on that list too. People like McTurtle and Murkowski and Mittens and Turncoat and Mikey Pence, just to name a few. And they wanted Trump gone. You know, it's not really a true two-party system. It's the uniparty versus the purely common folk like you and me. It's we the people versus the elites. But again, we have to keep moving. And I want to share one more news story under the scamdemic before we move on. A top oncologist sends an urgent letter. Stable cancers and other diseases are rapidly progressing in boosted people. This is from the RARE Foundation. And this is an urgent letter to the editor-in-chief of the medical journal, BMJ. That's the British Medical Journal. Dr. Angus Dalglish, professor of oncology at St. George's University of London, asks the UK to end the COVID jab program immediately. He's been a cancer specialist for more than 30 years, and he is now linking the COVID jab and blood clots and myocarditis and heart attacks and strokes to cancer. Now, he's been talking about this since June 2020, but nobody's heard him. Praise the Lord, that's starting to change too. So he is seeing this. And remember, we've been warning about this for well over a year now. The only way they could get the spike protein to withstand the attack of an individual's immune system was that they had to put an immune system suppressor in there. And when you suppress your immune system and shut down your T cells, cancers grow. You know, the average person is fighting cancer all the time. Those are just rogue cells. And they're searching around in your body for a place to anchor and colonize. And then they'll start this thing called angiogenesis, begin to grow their own vascular network, and they'll create this mass, this foreign matter in your body. Healthy, vibrant tissue, literally sucking the life out of you. And when you get these jabs to take effect, you have to suppress the very system that'll kill the spike protein your body's now making. And by killing that immune system, you're actually stopping your body's ability to fight these cancer cells. You know, folks, makes me think about the Darwin Awards. Do you remember the Darwin Awards? There's a movie out, and I want to just play the clip from it. The Darwin Awards. Just take a listen to this minute and 53-second trailer.
By the time I finish the sentence, about 7 people around the world will make a huge mistake. For instance, Trip Hansen was showing off his new penthouse office.
A glass, 4-ply, bulletproof.
Bullshit.
They call them the Darwin Awards. Each year they give an award for the person who died in the most...
What are you doing?
...idiotic way.
Walking the talk.
No!
Holy shit!
Everybody's gotta have a hobby. For me, it was the Darwin Awards.
I'm gonna pair you with a claims investigator, and she specializes in unusual cases.
I'd say it was actually more of an obsession.
Come to Papi.
I just couldn't help trying to imagine what type of person it would take to meet such strange fates.
He's stretching! Drop it! Back! Drop it! Go back!
Ever get the feeling there's a whole other world out there?
What, like Europe?
As soon as you hear the ignition, start filming.
You can go faster, baby. Oh, as fast as you can, come on.
If I'm gonna find a way to prevent these deaths, I have to know why they do it.
You are so obsessed with these Darwin cases that you are actually becoming one.
The Darwin Awards.
You're not going to get in trouble.
We're not going to be in trouble. We're going to be on TV.
The Darwin Awards. Clot shot ought to be given the Darwin Award. You know, the clot shot's the new screening test for the Darwin Awards, in my opinion. You know it kills, and you refuse it, and you live. Take it, and you'll get the Darwin Award sooner or later. It's sad that so many believed our lying government, folks. They're not here to help us. They have their own agenda. We have to keep moving, and right now, it's time for our Kabuki Theater Update.
COVID-19, George Floyd, Rice, BLM, police reform, the 2020 election. All merely coincidence? I hardly think so. Folks, it's called Kabuki Theater in Japanese. Ka means solve. Boo means dance. Ki means steal from the verb. Kabu means to slam or to sway. Folks, it's all a lie. It's the Latin curve. The curve of the economy, stupid. Must slow down the velocity of money. Or it'll hyperinflate before we're done. Stealing it all. Trump, bad. Must go. Good is bad. Bad is good. Up is down. Light is dark. It's all Kabuki Theater, folks. Prepping the masses for Agenda 2030 and the new world order. Just say no to it all and wake up before it's too late.
Yeah, the key here, folks, is saying no. We, the people, have to get up and say no. And if we do, we can still stop this. Now, I'd like to update you on what's going on down in Brazil. This is from Emerald, what's her name, Robinson, Absolute Truth. And she is interviewing one of the congressmen from Brazil. And the title is Bolsonaro to Fight On speaks to massive sea of supporters after 41 days of silence. And he says, I will give my life for my country. We will win. Now, last Friday, the convicted communist Lula da Silva announced his ministers for his new, he's setting up his transition team, including a radical leftist, Fernando Haddad, as finance minister. And this sent the Brazilian markets into a currency tailspin and freefall. Now, the prospective minister of defense, Jose Múcio Monteiro, announced he would purge the military of all patriots, calling it a depoliticization. So this put further pressure on the military commanders to act before this new regime, this de facto regime, takes control. So let's just listen to Emerald Robertson on the stolen election in Brazil. Now, this whole clip's almost 8 minutes. I don't know if I'm going to play the whole thing.
Lula da Silva's election team has just filed two lawsuits against President Jair Bolsonaro, his running mate Braga Neto, and his two sons. In one of his lawsuits, Lula is accusing President Bolsonaro, Neto, and the president's two sons of interfering with the elections by attacking Brazil's voting systems. He also alleges that President Bolsonaro is trying to build support for a military coup. In the second lawsuit, Lula accuses President Bolsonaro of abusing his powers by granting financial benefits to citizens during his campaign by saying he had the clear intention of gaining votes and therefore influencing the choice of Brazilian voters so as to harm the smoothness of the election. Lula's lawsuit aims to block all four defendants from running for office ever again. As we've been reporting, President Bolsonaro narrowly lost his re-election. Many, many Brazilians believe the election was stolen and that Silva is not the rightful winner, resulting in protests in over 70 cities. President Bolsonaro has been a critic of the country's electronic voting system even prior to the election. So let's welcome in Brazilian politician Luiz Felipe. He's a former congressman, and he joins us from Sao Paulo, Brazil. Good to see you, Congressman.
Nice to meet you. Thank you very much for having me.
We haven't gotten to talk to you about this in the past, so before we get more into the details, I just want your overall reaction to the Brazilian election and the aftermath.
The Brazilian election was not a very transparent process. There were a lot of issues that were raised prior to the elections regarding the process itself. None of these issues were actually addressed by the election committee. So that raised a lot of public opinion discontent with the fact that we really don't know what happens within the electronic system. At the same time that we have those doubts, we do not have, there's still like rampant possibilities of doing other types of interference with the process, such as asymmetries on placements on radio shows and different TV outlets. So there was a lot of interference and biased interference on one side. So that created a huge popular support that Bolsonaro already had, but a huge popular support to the idea that this election was not a fair election. So that's what's going on in Brazil. And people have been mobilized for the 5 days, 36 days. So that shows you the depth of the movement and the importance of what's going on. I don't see international media capturing the gravity of the issue here in Brazil. As far as Lula da Silva, as far as Lula da Silva, he has not been cleared of his crimes. So he is effectively still a criminal. He has been condemned by multiple judges, not just one judge, multiple judges in many instances on our judicial system. Yet he has the political clout of the Supreme Court. 100% of the Supreme Court has a ideological bias towards the left, and they obviously helped him be a candidate. So the population could not be more outraged as to having a still criminal being part of our electoral system. That's what's going on. At the same time that he's doing this,
So there you get the gist of what's going on in Brazil, folks. And it is an atrocity to this entire process, which they refer to as the democratic process. And it's sick. It's really sad. So it looks like Brazil is bracing for a confrontation between the pro-Lula Supreme Court and the pro-Bolsonaro military. And then there was another commentary by a man named Matt Ironmond on Steve Bannon on the War Room. And I'm going to quote him. Matt says that certain generals said load up on cash, food, and gas. And the people are doing that. After seeing the tanks and the APCs all over the country, the firefights in the favelas with the Venezuelan paramilitary groups, the website for the Army Reserve expansion crashed. Everybody's trying to get into the reserves and fight. I certainly think something is happening. So all this is going on, folks, and here's how the mainstream media covers it. Folks, I'm telling you, the mainstream media is bought and paid for. They are the propaganda arm of the deep state. And this message is being sent out around the world by these people in Brazil, and yet the mainstream media around the world is covering it up. They're covering up any kind of protest or uprising. It's now or never, people. If you're too afraid to take your country back, take your elections back, then you can kiss your lives as you know them goodbye. And we're about to lose everything, and real soon. The global takeover is here right now. And the Trojan horse in the White House is a key to this whole thing. We had our election stolen in both 2020 and 2022. Wake up, America. And by the way, mainstream media's disregard to all of this is criminal. Let's read the headlines on how they're covering the election steal in Arizona. Yahoo News reports Carrie Lake's lawsuit shows she's desperate and delusional. Vanity Fair headline reads, "The Republican Party's Donald Trump problem has a new face, Carrie Lake." The Washington Post reads, "Carrie Lake was unflinchingly loyal to Trump and our campaign unraveled." I could go on and on with these mainstream hacks and how they're covering all this. But the point here is that all these stories are spun in a way to disparage the rightful winner of the Arizona gubernatorial race, and that's Carrie Lake, folks. So let's look at the actual merit of her lawsuit. And here's the real scoop. So she filed this lawsuit, and she had to wait until after certification. That's the law in Arizona. The judge says are significant. 10 points. Number one, cyber expert Clay Arica says the machine failures that Arizona voters experienced on Election Day could not have occurred absent of intentional misconduct. Number two, between 15,603 and 29,257 Republican voters were disenfranchised. Over 300,000 mail-in ballots had no chain of custody, both violations of Arizona election law. Number three, whistleblowers. Tens of thousands of illegal ballots were counted, many with no signature verification. Number four, 59% of the 223 voting centers in Maricopa County had printer and tabulation failures on Election Day. These are damning accusations, folks, and they're all backed up by facts. Number five, remember the door three ballots, the uncounted ballots? They were commingled with already tabulated ballots, and there's strong reason to believe that the actual number door three ballots count was far beyond the reported 16,724. Number six, Katie Hobbs and Stephen Ryker both colluded with the federal government, and this is all coming out, folks, to censor constituents. This is known as election interference and a violation of the First Amendment. Number seven, there were conflicts of interest. Let's just look at four of them. Bill Gates, not the Bill Gates, but the Bill Gates guy out there, spent 2 years obstructing every election integrity effort in Arizona since the steal in 2020. And he even contributed to a PAC thought to undermine American First candidates. Then there was Stephen Ryker. He formed and used a well-funded PAC to defeat Carrie Lake. Katie Hobbs, Secretary of State. She oversaw her own election count. Talk about conflict of interest. Stephen Gallardo. He's now a member of Katie Hobbs' transition team. Just dig into Stephen Ryker and Stephen Gallardo. Number eight. There's a whistleblower, Runbeck, says that 298,942 early ballots had no chain of custody. Number nine, Maricopa County adds 25,000 ballots to the totals after Election Day. That's in violation of Arizona election law, for folks. And number 10, video footage, first-hand accounts, and expert testimony all directly contradict Maricopa County officials' public statements as they try to deliberately downplay these events. So these are all pointing towards election fraud. This is all sick, folks, and this should not be happening in the United States of America. Oh, and by the way, the judge just granted Carrie Lake's team the right to examine these ballots in Maricopa County for signature verification. This is big news. Now, the people who certified this mess should be prosecuted. Katie Hobbs should be labeled a domestic terrorist. Not people who speak out at school board meetings, not people who question what the word Zionism means and what the difference between a Jew and a Hebrew is, or what does the actual word Jew mean. Those aren't domestic terrorists. Those are truth seekers. Now, that's the case in a sane country, but we live in a banana republic where the courts, the laws, the votes, all fraudulent now. And this will never be stopped until the people's grand juries form and reveal these lies. And if that fails, we're left with either secession or revolt, folks. And I pray that we get our grand juries formed and we get this started. And that needs to be followed by purges of all of these traitors. And I'm telling you, if we don't do this and if we don't stop them with purges and they get our guns, they're going to purge us. And they're going to do a brutal purge. I'm talking about a political purge. Purge us, killing us. That's how they operate, folks. And to think otherwise is displaying what's known as the Stockholm Syndrome for hostages. Maybe we ought to do a segment on that sometime. But people that are believing these lies, they are displaying syndromes, or I should say symptoms of the Stockholm Syndrome. But we have to keep moving. And you know what it's time for right now, folks? It's time for our newest segment, Follow the Yellow Brick Road. And what do we do in this segment? We prove that the love of money is the root of all evil.
Follow the Yellow Brick Road. Follow the Yellow Brick Road.
Follow the Yellow Brick Road. Follow the Yellow Brick Road.
Follow the Yellow Brick Road.
Follow the Yellow Brick Road. Follow the Yellow Brick Road. Follow the Yellow Brick Road.
You can get in the wind, if ever a wind there was. If ever a wind there was.
So did you hear that COP27 ended in Egypt last week? Or in fact, did you even know that COP27 was underway? Well, here's how our lying fake news reported on the COP27 meeting. So what is COP27? Well, go to COP27's website and see what they say. So under the COP27 website, they have a section called Goals and Vision. And here's their own quote. Inclusive, rules-based, and ambitious, substantive outcomes commensurate with the challenges based on science, guided by principles, building on agreements, decisions, pledges, and commitments. Sounds so wonderful, huh? Let's all get our hands together and sing Kumbaya. And then here's the key. From Rio 1992 to Glasgow 2021, we seek to accelerate global climate action through emissions reduction, scaled up adaptive efforts, and enhanced flows of appropriate finance. Rio 1992, we've covered it here, folks. That's where they set up this bogus system to count CO2 emissions. Remember, we talked about it. They kept it limited to anthropomorphic global warming. So no natural, no sunspot activity, no volcanism, no forest fires, nothing to do with the environment that has a bigger impact by 1 to 3 orders of magnitude than CO2 does. Folks, CO2 is needed for photosynthesis. It's such a lie. But let's listen to the hype from one of their propaganda pieces that they put out prior to the COP27 meeting. It's titled, Get Ready, We Need to Come Together, COP27. This is UN propaganda at its finest.
Most scientists agree that an increase of just 0.4 more degrees will drastically change the world.
And the world are dealing with record extreme heat.
Storms have been causing deadly floods.
You could have mass melting of ice sheets in Greenland and Antarctica.
If we don't act immediately, scientists say the consequences will be catastrophic.
3 degrees of warming is really disastrous.
Dealing with unprecedented heat waves and drought.
All day today, the rain falling so heavily and so quickly, $10 billion, but recovery funds are tight.
Rescuers doing everything they can to reach survivors.
Time. What if we could buy ourselves time? What if we could go back in time, undo what we've done, and start over? I say what if, because that is simply impossible. As the world moves forward at an unprecedented pace, we need to find ways to keep up with change and with time. For the past 4.5 billion years, planet Earth has been thriving, growing, and constantly evolving. And while we've only been around for thousands of years, some of what we've done is irreparable. Now, our planet needs our help, and we're running out of time. In today's rapidly warming world, the climate crisis won't wait for anyone. That's where you come in. You, the decision makers, the game changers, the forward thinkers, the first responders. You who make things happen and get things moving. You can help give the Earth a fighting chance. And the time to do so is right now.
What? What? Are you serious? Can I have some more coffee?
They're serious, but it's all lies. That 0.4 degree, put your limit, lies. Sea level rises in the past 100 years are negligible, folks. Just take a look at landmarks. Plymouth Rock. Statue of Liberty. There's no change in the sea level. But the sea level has risen 400 feet since the last ice age 12,000 years ago. And that line, our planet needs help. You know, they're using this Gaia worship. And that came out years ago with Earth Day 27, where they all got together and planned all these schemes for the greatest wealth transfer in the history of the world. They come out with this little propaganda piece. Here's what happens after COP27 ends. Have a listen.
COP27 is coming to a wrap after two long weeks of exhaustive climate talk. So what's next? The final text.
The final text is the big declaration coming out of this conference. Every COP has what they call the cover decision. This cover decision really covers all of the big political issues. That's everything from the role of fossil fuels to the commitment to 1.5 to how countries come together on finance. We hope there'll be a final closing plenary probably Saturday afternoon, maybe even in the Sunday morning.
As Kathy said, it'll take a bit longer until we see the final draft of the text, which is common. But we have looked at the first draft, and many are disappointed, with Greenpeace saying that it's a path to, quote, a climate house.
Well, I am an optimist, so I am going to assume this draft is going to be a good step forward, but these cover decisions are never able to do everything that we want them to do.
Now, the final draft could significantly be reworked, but final texts do have a history of not mentioning fossil fuels in its topic. In fact, this draft has only one mention of fossil fuels. And much like last year, it only recommends phasing down fossil fuels and not eliminating them completely. So, what's the overall takeaway?
The only conference in the world on climate where you have every country having an equal seat at the table. Countries have to make some big decisions and take some big risks to be able to achieve this. But we're all counting on them to. The world needs them to do it.
So there you have it. More propaganda. But there's questions that remain unanswered, you know? Key questions. Which countries and industries are going to pay for all this? How much? And why? Well, what's the truth about COP27? Well, the award-winning journalist Alex Newman, author of two popular books, Deep State and the Crimes of Educators, explained that the deep state globalists spent 2 weeks in this conference in Egypt called COP27 in a hushed meeting where they essentially outlined the plan to enslave the planet with a new world order globalist agenda. It was a huge conference, folks, knew little if anything about it because the lying legacy media didn't cover it. Now, thanks to USA Watchdog for covering this. Greg Hunter, you're doing a great job. So he had Newman on, and Newman attended it, and he says, this is an incredibly significant story anywhere else in the world. You would have seen very extensive coverage on the press, yet in the fake news here in the U.S., as we call it, there was nothing. He said there were tens of thousands of journalists there, and he called them cheerleading section for the global world conspiracy. Yet the American media was conspicuously absent. He said if the Americans knew what was going on, they'd put a stop to it almost immediately. There was almost totally radio, What a tongue twister. Radio silence in the U.S. over this, folks. And this is very significant because if you had 125 prime ministers, kings, dictators, and presidents from around the world, including Joe Biden at this meeting, you've got to wonder why it's not being covered. Well, it's not being covered because it's one of the greatest economic heists in the history of the world, folks. They're going to take from us and give to others. At least that's their premise, when in reality, they're taking from us and giving to themselves. These uber elites, the one percenters and the kleptocrats of the world will keep the third world impoverished. They're not going to help these countries. This is so much more than a money issue, folks. This is a freedom issue. That's what Newman explains. He explains it's very clear that the World Health Organization, the climate change process, and all these different arms are working together to take down freedom around the world and most importantly, here in America, and then comes along Trump back in 2016. He pulls the U.S. out of UNESCO, the UN Education Agency, all these different groups pushing for one world religion and one world health and one world money. Well, Trump was a nationalist. Remember, he's part of the English Freemasons, and there's this great battle going on with the French Freemasons, and Trump stood there. with a wrecking ball, tearing down all of these globalistic agendas of the French Freemasons. And he wanted America to continue as a free and sovereign nation. Of course, he's working for the other arm of the secret society. But he did have an agenda contrary to most of the globalists. And Newman says one of the reasons the globalists had to take Trump down in 2020 presidential election is because of this. Now, he wasn't getting into all of this. Newman didn't talk about the battle between the French and English Freemasons. That's me, folks. But in closing, Newman says they are trying to bring all religions on earth on board. They want to get all religions together and create an alliance of virtue. And folks, this is all foretold in the Bible. He continues, we are seeing the nucleus of one world diabolical religion coming into view. And it's Gaia worship, folks, worship of the earth. As you study what is happening here, you realize this does not glorify God. This flatly contradicts the Bible from the Christian perspective that has been delivered by God through the Bible. Frankly, it's evil. This is a recipe for global tyranny, and God is the author of liberty. These two things are obviously not compatible. And then he goes on to quote Ephesians chapter 5, verse 11, one of my favorite verses, and he says that this has been his motto for many years. Scripture says to have no fellowship with the unfruitful works of darkness. Rather, reprove them and expose them. Folks, as Christians, you and I are supposed to be exposing all this. This is why I talk about that uncomfortable topic, the Jews. That's why I talk about these uncomfortable things concerning adverse side effects. That's why I talk about all of these things. Not because I'm a doomer and a gloomer, but because we need to expose darkness to the light of truth. And the more you dig into the UN's view on religion, the darker it gets. They worship the creature rather than the creator, folks. And this is what we're seeing happen right in front of our eyes right now. Lucis Trust, folks. I've covered it countless times over the years here on SDG. Look into the Lucis Trust. Maybe we'll review it again in a future episode, but we've got to keep moving. And right now it's time for Coop Talk with Henrietta. But I don't see her. Where are you at, Henrietta? Hey, Henrietta, come on. Come on, where are you? Get over here. There she is. As you know, we sit Henrietta down here. She's our head chicken over at the coop, and we talk prep talk here with Henrietta. So what I'd like to do today is just ruminate a bit on an article by J.D. Rucker. It's amazing, but J.D. and I have so many of the same thoughts at about the same time. I was just thinking about a prepper mentality concerning money and this whole central bank digital currency scam that's coming out, another part of this whole total enslavement process. And J.D. comes out with this article this week. Only those with a prepper mentality today will survive the digital dollar tomorrow. But sadly, you know, folks, most people are in the dark about this. They don't even know what's happening. And they're having a tough time. So December, J.D. publishes this, and he says there's three types of people in America today. Those completely oblivious to the coming digital dollar. Those who may have heard it but just aren't paying any attention. And chances are a lot of those people think it's Bitcoin or PayPal. But they couldn't care less because they don't realize how close they are to actually seeing this digital bank currency come into effect. And then there are those who eagerly await it. They only see positives, and their guard is down. Of course, there's a fourth group of small minority, and that's all of us. And they call us conspiracy theorists for knowing that the digital dollar will be the ultimate control mechanism for this global governance. Now, there are all these variety of public-private partnerships that the globalist elite use, NGOs. And JD's talking about what we need to do, and he suggests that everybody read this article, the latest article by Ron Paul, where Ron highlights the various problems the government's created that's going to lead to absolute turmoil. Remember, Ordo Ab Chaos, problem, reaction, solution. So it's important to know what's happening, and that's the point here, folks. Then we need to understand the circumstances that are brewing to enable the rollout of this digital dollar. So they're going to actually create the problem and then offer the solution. And then they're going to say, oh, just sign up for this digital currency and we'll make you whole. But it always comes with conditions. Comply or we shut you off. Spend or you lose it. So it's going to discourage savings. It's going to discourage freedom of thought and freedom of expression. And then they're also going to control what you buy and where you move. Maybe you go to put gas in your car to visit grandma over Christmas, and your card's declined because you've already used your allocation. So you don't have to be a full doomsday prepper to prepare for this and to survive the digital dollar doomsday. But here's the problem. Most people don't have the resources to stack silver and to create a storehouse full of storable food. But we all need to do the best we can, and that's my point here. And the first thing you can do is cut expenses and then start stocking up on necessities. And for those of you still in the city, do I need to say more, folks? Get out of the city. That's how they're going to control you, through the mega cities. So if you're in the cities, leave. If you have any way of getting out, get out now. Because what they're going to do is they're going to control the masses in the cities first. And they're going to leave the people in the flyover zone outside of those beltways around each city, which will be their control grid. They're going to leave us for later. Remember the World Economic Forum's Mega Cities on the Move Plan Doppler clip? Let's just have a listen.
Hi, I'm so glad you're on time. I'm V. I'm looking forward to showing you around Plandopolis today. My husband works from home. He's a virtual engineer working on one of the city's desalination plants. He controls the robots who do all the important maintenance. I think he basically plays computer games for a living. You ready to go? Have you got your calorie card open on your smartphone? I registered your visit with Slick Travel Corp the other day, so they've allotted you a journey time to match mine. It makes so much sense, doesn't it? Switch off brain and go to work. With this many people around, I'm glad there's a mega computer in charge. We're so lucky. Our kids were allocated a school quite near my practice, so I can drop them off on the way. Saves on our calorie ration. Well, it won't be long until the little darlings get their career announcements. They've been working so hard, so I'm sure they'll get something good. Not that there's anything wrong with fixing carbon scrubbers for a living or anything. Are you hungry? Let's pop to the market as we're passing. Right, what's on the menu this month? No, not meat. It's not your birthday. The Global Food Council are doing a really good job of keeping food production going. I mean, you don't get the choice you used to, but we're better off than most. I think it's probably easiest to walk from here. You barely see a car in the city centre nowadays, unless you're rich. Well, the state knows they just aren't practical anymore. We're all trying to meet our global carbon deal. Electric bikes are so much better for getting around our neighbourhood. And why waste valuable space on car parks when you can use them to grow food? I don't care what you say, Alex. They don't deserve to live in that ghetto. They are completely disconnected. No high-speed transport system, no new internet. They miss out on jobs and many essential services, too. Oh, hi again. What a day. I had to make an emergency visit to the Cry Freedom ghetto. I mean, I miss my sister like mad, but I'm glad they went when they moved to New Amsterdam. They're safe from climate change on the floating city. That must be her now. It's much easier to meet up with friends virtually now. So many cities have banned cars in central areas. Ooh, looks like she's got some juicy gossip.
So there you have it. They're going to start by controlling the cities, the mega cities. And then there's going to be all those Klingons, that's you and me, folks, out in the lands. And we're going to be looked down upon. But we're going to be the ones that are truly free. So anyone who can start stocking up now, stock up on food, water, ammo, meds, and a Bible, could definitely start doing so now. It's going to be even more challenging to get these basic necessities once they unroll the digital dollar. So having the supplies now and getting them over time will sustain you while we fight to overturn this New World Order. And if you have wealth in an IRA, or I should say a 401k, and you have retirement income to protect, get it out of the 401ks now. Remember, we talked about what's going on with the Biden regime right now as they incentivize these fund managers to invest in ESG woke companies, even if they lose your money. So get it moved out of the 401ks, get it into self-directed IRAs now. And better yet, move it into a gold or silver IRA. And better yet, take the hit, the 10% tax penalty, and get it into physical possession of gold right now. And be quiet about all this, okay? Now, I can knock off a dozen different things we should all be doing right now, but it boils down to one thing, a prepper mentality. So if you believe that this digital dollar is coming, and it doesn't really matter if you do, it's coming, folks, and you don't want to participate in these population control initiatives and these depopulation agendas, behooves you to advance yourself in terms of preparedness now, no matter how well or ill-prepared you may be at this moment. So number one, assess your situation and decide on what changes you need to make right now to reduce expenses and begin to accumulate resources. Look at your streaming accounts. Maybe you have three or four and you're paying a total of 80 or 90 bucks a month. How about cutting down to one, or better yet, go to the free services like Tubi and Pluto? And there are others, folks. There's a lot of free content out there. Prepare the best you can now. And the better you prepare now, the longer you'll outlast the digital dollar as they roll it out. And that's been my motto for nearly 30 years now, folks. But I have to keep moving. And it's time for our Hopium Report.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Hopium Report, where dreamers of all sorts come for their faith snort. Prepare to get high on Hopium.
This was a classic, folks. Two GOP reps from Virginia ask a group of trans activists if extremist rhetoric online leads to violence. This was a gobsmack. Classic. Last Tuesday, GOP rep Nancy Mace and GOP Rep. Byron Donalds, both from Virginia, confronted a radical trans activist, actually a guy gone gal, Alexandra Caballo, during testimony in front of the Oversight Committee in Washington, D.C. So they were there to discuss extremism and white supremacy in front of the House Oversight Committee. And Representative Nancy Mace did a great job in steering this conversation. I just want to say, for all the good Mace does, she did a great disservice as she referred to this great republic as a democracy. But let's listen to this 4-minute and 27-second gobsmack.
Is rhetoric on social media a problem and a threat to our democracy, Mr. Ward?
Yes, absolutely.
Mr. Siegel?
Yes.
Ms. Caraballo?
Yes.
Ms. Nomani?
Yes.
Ms. Tyler?
Yes. Yes.
Another question I have, do you believe that rhetoric targeting officials with violence for carrying out their constitutional duties is a threat to democracy, Mr. Ward? Mr. Siegel?
Yes.
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 All right. Thank you very much. Only a few weeks after the attempted attack on a Supreme Court justice on June 25th, one of the witnesses, Alejandra Caraballo, tweeted out the following in response to a decision on abortion overturning Roe v. Wade, and I'll quote directly from the tweet, "The six justices who overturned Roe should never know peace again. It is our civic duty to accost them every time they're in public. They are pariahs. Since women don't have their rights, these justices should never have a peaceful moment in public again. I know something about being accosted. The night of January 5th, I was physically accosted on the streets of D.C. in Navy Yard by a constituent of mine. I fervently blamed rhetoric on social media, rhetoric at public events, for being physically accosted. I carry a gun everywhere I go when I am in my district and I'm at home, because I know personally that rhetoric has consequences. I've had my car keyed. I've had my house spray painted. I had someone trespass in my house as recently as August. I've been doxxed on social media about where I live. And I've had to add to security everywhere I go, often because I can't afford it. I have to carry my own firearm wherever I go. And Alejandra Caraballo also recently tweeted on November 19th, not even a month ago, that the Supreme Court, vested with the judicial power of the United States by our Constitution, stated they are not a legitimate court issuing decisions. And also the Supreme Court is an organ of the far right. So my last question today of Ms. Caraballo, do you stand by these comments, this kind of rhetoric on social media, and do you believe it's a threat to democracy?
Thank you, Representative, for the opportunity to clarify and provide context to my tweets.
I have a question. Is it yes or no? Do you believe your rhetoric is a threat to democracy when you're calling to accost a branch of government, the Supreme Court?
I don't believe that's a correct characterization of my statements.
Did you not tweet that? But you thought that the Supreme Court justices should be accosted.
What I'm saying is that is not an accurate characterization of my statements.
On June 8th of this year, a man was arrested near Justice Brett Kavanaugh's home in Maryland. He told law enforcement officers he wanted to kill a Supreme Court justice. He was found with a knife, with a pistol, two magazines, ammunition, pepper spray, zip ties, a hammer, crowbar, and duct tape.
Ms. Caraballo, on page 12 and 13 of your written testimony, you painted concerned parents.
So I'm going to cut it off there, folks, for the sake of time, but that was GOP Rep. Donalds, who was starting to ask his questions. But I think that was a classic, folks, and there is hope yet. And speaking of doxing, did you hear what Elon Musk did after he was doxed by some mainstream journalists? He deplatformed them. Way to go. I don't know about you folks, but these white supremacists that everybody's talking about, they're kind of like unicorns. You hear a lot about them, but you never actually see one. Now, some say that talking to these reprobates, like these LGBTQ activists, is just a waste of time. They're insane. So what's the point? They lie. They commit crimes. They scream if and when caught. Look at all these libs right now that got deplatformed by Elon. They're crying. Well, here's why. If we don't confront them, they won't learn that they can't lie with impunity. Secondly, they need to understand that theirs is just one opinion. And most opinions stink, like something we all else share. And thirdly, appeasement and avoidance of confrontation has helped them get to where they're at right now. So it's important that we address these issues. Plus, showing the normies what these freaks really are is so important, because it's 5% on the one side, that's us, the freedom fighters, and there's 5% on the other, these radical lunatic activists. And in the middle, there's about 90% of the masses that need to be woken up. So when we show these normies what these freaks are all about, fighting back, and we can reject these things they say and do and advocate for. And it's all being enabled by the deep state puppets and their masters. And I could go on and on with this. Right now, it's time for our Absurdian Report.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the world of the absurd. This is The Absurdium Report.
Life mimics theater, but fiction is safer. The curtain rises. The show begins.
This week, we've got a lot of the commentary and talking heads out there all talking about the prisoner trade between Russian arms dealer Viktor Bout and the guy-turned-gal basketball player who got caught at the Moscow airport with some cannabis oil, Brittany Griner. So everybody's out giving their opinion. And Democratic Rep. Sheila Jackson Lee, perhaps one of the dumbest women in Congress, appeared on MSNBC's readout with Joy Reid to discuss the Brittany Griner swap. Now, meanwhile, remember, we have a former Marine, 52, who's now imprisoned in Russia, and she's defending this trade on the Sunday show. And she actually said, and this is why this is in the Absurdian report, in actuality, weapons might have been used to kill Americans, but he has not killed Americans. Listen to it in her own words.
To kill Americans? He has not killed Americans. I'm not saying he's not a nasty, bad guy, but I will tell you that I believe that Americans should know that the sovereignty of their nation will always be behind them and they'll never be forgotten.
She's cuckoo, folks. Cuckoo. 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 So meanwhile, this cuckoo wants to go after gun manufacturers because guns kill Americans. But this guns dealer didn't kill Americans. You can't make this stuff up. Back on May 26, 2021, Sheila Jackson Lee tweeted, "People are dying. We've had the greatest number of mass shootings that I have ever seen since being in the United States Congress. We must demand that we move these bills. We must support leaders in the Senate who are moving on this legislation and stop letting the gun manufacturers run America." Who has a lower IQ than Rep. Jackson Lee? Who? Oh, maybe Maxine Waters. And I'm telling you, the black communities deserve so much better than these two corrupt idiots. And so do all American citizens, folks. So wake up, America. Wake up, black America. And that's what Kanye's doing, folks. Plus, you know, the truth is that Brittany Griner is a happily married biological man, a pot smoker, and she's made millions, or he has made millions, by playing basketball against women. In other words, he's a Democratic icon, just like FTX's founder, who is now facing all sorts of criminal charges. Yet Sheila Jackson and her ilk, they venerate these icons in their perverse religion of wokeism. But now time for Ken's Corner, spelled with a K.
Welcome to Ken's Corner, spelled with a K, where I'll share my life experiences to help you understand what's going on in this crazy, crazy world. So let's get started.
Now today what I'd like to do, folks, is share a book from my past. This book is something that's been in my library for close to 40 years. Was written by a woman named Nesta Helen Webster. And if you go online and type in Nesta Helen Webster, the first hit you're going to see is Wikipedia. And this article is labeled as part of the anti-Semitism series on Wikipedia. So she was born in 1876, died in 1960. I wasn't even born yet. She's an English author who promoted anti-Semitic canards and revived theories about the Illuminati. She claimed that the secret society members were occultists plotting communist world domination through a Jewish cabal, the Masons, and the Jesuits. She blamed the group for events including the French Revolution, 1848 Revolution, the First World War, and the Bolshevik Revolution. Oh, by the way, folks, all true. Her writing influenced later conspiracy theories and ideologies, including American anti-communism, especially the John Birch Society, and the militia movement. So in 1920, she became a contributor to the Jewish Peril. It was a series of articles in the London Morning Post centered on forged documents of the Protocols of the Learned Elders of Zion, and we've covered all that. And this is all from Wikipedia and their spin on trying to disparage her. So it goes on and it talks about some of her other books, and the one I want to focus on today is the one that was instrumental in my understanding. secret societies and subversive movements. This was published back in 1924. And I have a reprint of this book, and I think this was a reprint by the John Birch Society. And I just want to go through the contents of this book for you. So in the first part, she talks about the past. And there are 10 chapters. The ancient secret tradition, the revolt against Islam, the Templars, 3 centuries of occultism, the origins of Freemasonry, the Grand Lodge era, German Templarism and French Illuminism. That's kind of what I was talking about with Trump and the French Freemasons, folks. The Jewish Kabbalists, the Barbarian Illuminati, and the climax. And then in the second part, she talks about the present. And she has chapters 11 through 15, modern Freemasonry, secret societies in England, open subversive movements, Pan-Germanism, the real Jewish peril. You know, folks, I have a little bit of a lag here on this. I have to have my headset on to make sure that I'm broadcasting, and I have about a fraction of a second delay. When I hear my voice, it makes me stutter sometimes. So I don't have a speech impediment, but I hear myself talking in the headset, and it's out of sync. So anyways, there are global conspiracies underway. And not only are the Zionists behind it, but so are many other subversive groups. And there's also a few appendices in here, one with the Jewish evidence found in the Talmud and the protocols, complete copy of it in the back of her book. So I just suggested that you know, I would like you to know about that. I'm suggesting you look into it. I think it's very powerful, and I think it could really help you on your truth quest. But we have to keep moving. Time left. I have to get to the heart of this whole show today. And of course, that's in the Back to the Future segment, where we take something from the past and bring it back to the future. Right now, folks, what I'd like to do is wind the clock back. Wind the clock back to the founding of the World Jewish Congress on August 1936, 86 years ago. It was founded in Geneva, Switzerland on August 1936 as an international federation of Jewish communities and organizations. That's according to their mission statement. So the World Jewish Congress's main purpose was to act as the diplomatic arm of the Jewish people. That was their founding premise. Now let's wind the clock ahead to the present. We're going to bounce back and forth for a little bit here. So today, if you type it in and just go to their website, you'll see that they're an international organization that represents Jewish communities and organizations in 100 countries around the world. And it advocates on their behalf towards governments, parliaments, international organizations, and other faiths. The World Jewish Congress represents the plurality of Jewish people and is, and this is their words, not mine, politically nonpartisan. And a bit of their propaganda, if you would go to their website and listen to one of their clips. So here's one called Everyone. Everyone counts. This is from a 2018 campaign video they had to heighten awareness of their cause.
I am a mom.
I'm a playwright and a professor.
I am an activist.
I'm a Jew who was born in Russia.
We're Israelis.
And this is my home.
Our home.
I am proud to live here.
In our quiet corner in Connecticut.
I feel safe.
Accepted.
A part of my Jewish community.
but I know that some people are not so lucky.
I've learned that halfway around the world,
and sometimes even closer than that,
people like us are not always accepted.
That in some places, it's unsafe just to be who you are.
I have learned that my life completely can change in the blink of an eye.
In the eye of the storm.
And I've learned that when we come together to support those who need our help,
we can change the world for the better.
Together, we can feed the hungry.
Support families with special needs.
Fund Jewish education and Israeli experiences.
Bridge cultural divide.
Ensure a Jewish future.
That's why I give.
I give.
I give.
To the Jewish Federation of Greater New Haven.
From New Haven.
To Israel.
And around the world.
It starts with us to support people in need.
And you know what, folks? We all must be safe. Yet these folks, these Jews, these Hebrews, are pawns to the Zionists. The same Zionists that slaughtered so many in Russia during the Bolshevik Revolution. The same Zionists that sacrificed their own people in Germany under Hitler. The same people who claim that their organization, the World Jewish Congress, represents the plurality of Jewish people in a politically non-partisan way. Now remember, this is right from their own website. They claim to be politically non-partisan. And yet, from their own website, I found another clip which completely contradicts that claim. And this is one where they're promoting their World Jewish Congress diplomatic corps. Just listen to this one.
In a world fraught with challenges, one man had a vision to build an elite team, a new generation of Jewish leaders.
The Jewish people need a global diplomatic body of its own.
This is the Jewish Diplomatic Corps of the World Jewish Congress. Ronald S. Lauder's vision realized, and now they're making a difference. Supporting Jewish communities around the world, advocating for Israel at the United Nations, fighting for humanity at the Human Rights Council, communicating via powerful media outlets, representing Jewish interests in diplomatic meetings, ensuring that Jews are safe, respected, and free for generations to come. To overcome a world of challenges, we're fortunate to have this great team working for us.
We are standing for Israel, and we are standing for human rights.
We're fighting on the ground. We're fighting diplomatically at places like the UN.
UN Human Rights Council has condemned Israel more times than the rest of the world combined. How is this possible?
The World Jewish Congress is alarmed by the increase of in hate speech, xenophobia, and incitement to violence against minorities.
The JD Corps is a network of doers, a network of thinkers, and a network of friends.
What I really hope to accomplish is to leave the world a better place in some small way than I found it.
When you put those people together and they're motivated for the right reasons, they can actually make a difference, I think, politically and in different communities.
By working together alongside the Jewish communities and the Jewish leadership around the world, this is where we bring the future.
I think the best is still to come for the JDs.
There is truly no group of young Jewish leaders like the Jewish Diplomatic Corps of the World Jewish Congress.
With our next generation of leaders, the World Jewish Congress will overcome the challenges facing the Jewish people.
So there you have it, in their own words. They're a group advocating for Israel. Makes them political, folks. And that makes these Zionists fair game. Not Jews ethnically, not Hebrews religiously, but Zionists politically, fair game for commentary and discussion. We can shine the light of truth on their agendas now. Politically motivated group. And quite honestly, folks, it's gloves off. And these Zionists are fair game for criticism and frank, open discussions. So I found one, and it's tough to find. But here's an article written by Dan Rayner on June 1st, 2019, titled The Jewish Congress, the World Jewish Congress Exposed. Now, I found it at the beginning of the week on renegadetribune.com, and it's gone. It's up now on englishnews.org. and you can find it there. And I'm going to encourage you to go out and read this. This is impactful. And an expose on the World Jewish Congress, which is one of the most subversive and heavily networked Jewish international subversive groups with numerous offshoots and collaborative Jewish organizations. Dig into this, folks. Kind of puts all the pieces of the puzzle together. And why is this so important? Because in their own history, the World Jewish Congress, WJC for short, admits in a typically deceptive manner that its purpose is to subvert others, including entire nations, for the interests of Jews, and that their racial cohesion versus all others is at the core of their mission. So while we have open borders here, and while we have intermarriage and all these different things, which I'm not speaking against, there's a right way to enter the border. And if a black man wants to marry a white woman or whatever, that's their decision. But for the Jews, we have to maintain racial purity. Isn't that a contradiction? These are the same folks that were the architects of the Holodomor. If you don't know what that is, that's when they starved out over 10 million Ukrainians during the Soviet economic policy implementation during the beginning of the USSR. And these are the same people that were behind Genrich Yagoda's entire genocidal malice of Europe. And I can go on and on. But this group, founded in 1936, presses the very mentioning of these different historic events. Yeah, that's history, folks. And it's clear that the WJC was formed in opposition to the successful expose of Jewish influence in continental Europe. In fact, it was formed a year after the democratic victory of the German nation over the Jewish leadership of Germany. And if you don't believe all this, folks, it's in the history books. Read it. And then years later, world Jewry would force other European nations into fractional divisions and wars, which resulted in World War I and World War II. And they admit quite openly that it's the de facto propaganda front of the international Jewish efforts. So I'm going to encourage you to go out and read this book, this article. It's very long, it's very well researched, and after every assertion, what they do, and I'll just walk you through it real quick here. I called it up. So this is from EnglishNews.org. Just go to EnglishNews.org and then search for the article, The World Jewish Congress Exposed. So what they'll do is they'll make an assertion after they cite something concerning the World Jewish Congress right from their website. So there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 topics that they cover in this article. And it's all taken right from the World Jewish Congress website. And then they get into the facts behind it. So here's one. The unit's mission, this is referring to the diplomatic corps, is to monitor, research, and implement activities to counter anti-Semitism. So then the author goes on to say, this role seems to be what their entire organization is about. But they have a little proclaimed unit, which on its description page admits on spying on individuals and groups to achieve this. The unit's mission is to monitor, research, and implement activities to counter anti-Semitism. Again, we have to define what anti-Semitism is. What is it? What is it? Are we talking about religion? Are we talking about race? Are we talking about politics? I'll never oppose your race or religion, folks, but I will oppose your politics if they are contrary to freedom and the truth with every last breath I have. Does that mean you're going to spy on me? Does that mean you're going to label me anti-Semitic? Do you see the rabbit hole this is, folks? And do you see why most people won't touch it, including Alex Jones and good old Timmy Poole? Because they're going to lose all of their yellow brick road. Folks, I don't have a yellow brick road. And that's why I'll talk about it. So I encourage you to go out there and read this article. Now the question is, how does this apply to today? There's this new clip out, and I think Kanye spawned a lot of this. But there's this new clip out, and it's out by the World Jewish Congress, and it's called Shine the Light on Antisemitism.
Light one candle for the Maccabee children, with thanks that their light didn't die. And light one candle for the pain they endured, their right to exist was denied. Light one candle for the terrible sacrifice justice and freedom demand. Light one candle for the wisdom to know when the peacemakers died at their hands.
Okay, so that's out there. And I caught it on the morning news one day when I was doing my mom's therapy with her. I was shocked. My mom said, what are you looking at? I said, Mom, did you see what was just on TV there? And my mom, God bless her, yeah, they're talking out against anti-Semitism. And there you have it. But it's not that simple, folks, because this week on NBC News, and it's a report that they did concerning the Department of Homeland Security warning of domestic terror threats to LGBTQ+ Jewish and migrant communities. Let's have a listen.
First, NBC News, the Department of Homeland Security is now warning of possible threats to the LGBTQ+ community, to Jewish and migrant communities, coming from violent extremists inside the United States. According to one senior official, Americans motivated by violent ideologies pose, and I'm quoting here, a persistent and lethal threat. The DHS bulletin also talks about how some extremists have been inspired by attacks recently, including that shooting at the LGBTQ+ bar in Colorado Springs. NBC's Julia Ainsley is a reporter behind this scoop for NBC News. She's here with this story. Tell us more about these threats, what DHS is going to do about them now.
So, Hallie, this is the latest bulletin from the National Terrorism Advisory System. They've been putting out regular bulletins about every 6 months since January 6th, the insurrection at the Capitol, where they're really going through the details and the concerns that they have about domestic violent extremism, not looking anymore at ISIS and Al-Qaeda, but focusing instead on Americans who are radicalized by violent ideologies. And the three that they highlighted today in the newest bulletin that just came out goes into threats to the LGBT community, again, looking at that shooting recently in Colorado Springs and how people were celebrating it, motivated by it online. They're looking at a lot of times on the online rhetoric following these events. Also looking at anti-Semitism, following someone in New Jersey who had a paragraph where he came out against synagogues there. And then I asked specifically these DHS officials, what about Kanye West? What about his anti-Semitic rhetoric? What about former President Trump meeting with Kanye West and that white supremacist? They said, look, all of that, whenever you have public figures who are continuing to spread this violent ideology, that is a problem, and it spreads it more rapidly online. They're also worried about immigrants. Particularly, they flagged changes coming soon in border policies. As we know, COVID-19 restrictions are about to lift next month at the border on December 21st. They're worried that that change could impact some migrants and that they could also be the target of violence. Again, this is all part of a shift that we've seen from Department of Homeland Security and the broader intelligence community over the past about 5 years, Hallie, as they've really shifted the focus away from foreign terrorists and more to these homegrown threats right here in the United States from Americans.
Wow. Do you see the setup here, folks? So as they tug at the heartstrings, people like my mother and maybe you, they are actually starting to create the policies and the plans to silence anyone who asks the question, what is a Jew? Now, it's really easy to lose hope in the midst of all this. And as I open, folks, the Bible says in Proverbs chapter 3, verse 12, hope that is deferred afflicts the soul. And we need to prevent that at all costs, because when we continue to hope, and I'm not talking about a worldly hope, I'm talking about a godly hope. We will have our deepest godly longings fulfilled, which is, like I said when I opened, quite literally, the tree of life. So how important is this hope to the human soul? Well, the Bible says that faith is the substance of things hoped for and the evidence of things yet not seen. So I would say that hope's right up there. In fact, St. Paul said in 1 Corinthians chapter 13 that faith and love are the three most important things, with love being the ultimate. So hope is essential to the human soul, like the writer of Proverbs chapter 13 told us. So there are times of high hope in our lives, and there are times of low hope in our lives, times of fulfillment and times of disappointment. Who can deny that? Hope, you know, it keeps us moving forward with a drive, an exhilaration. Yet when hope is deferred, when hope is quenched, it can get bad. So the question is, how do we have hope? Another question. On a scale of 1 to 10, where's your hope today? Where is it? Is it a 1 or is it a 10? Are you hopeful or are you in despair? Well, it's very important to have hope. But what is hope, you know? How would you define that word, hope? What is it? Well, you know, a lot of people define hope in a lot of different ways, and I don't want to talk about all these worldly definitions today concerning hope. What I want to focus on is what the Bible says hope is. Now, the world says that hope is the wish for a particular event that one considers possible, have confidence or trust, to deserve and consider possible. But the hope I'm talking about is the hope we place in a person, you know? And that person is none other than Jesus Christ. Inspired by this, but this isn't exactly everything that Pastor Todd talked about. I was inspired by this, by his message on hope this week. We're lighting the Advent candles, and he's going through different elements of the faith and talking about hope this week. And he cited 1 Peter chapter 1, verse 3, which says, "Blessed be the God and Father of our Lord Jesus Christ, which according to his abundant mercy hath begotten us again unto a lively hope by the resurrection of Jesus Christ from the dead." So our hope is grounded in a truth that Jesus Christ rose from the dead. Then in verse 13, St. Peter says, "Wherefore, gird up the loins of your mind, be sober, and hope to the end for the grace that is to be brought unto you at the revelation of Jesus Christ." So we have this anchor in the past, the resurrection of Jesus Christ, and the hope of our resurrection. He was the first fruit, remember? Then there's us. And then we have this future hope of the revelation of Jesus Christ when he comes back in all of his glory. And then in verse 21 of that same letter, St. Peter says, "Who by him do believe in God that raised him up from the dead and gave him glory, that your faith and hope might be in God." Now, folks, that's the difference between worldly hope and biblical hope. Our hope is in the person Jesus Christ, and the promises that God made. Promise that he would rebuild that temple in 3 days, which he did, and that promise that he will soon return, and we will be glorified in his image. We're going to reflect the glory of the Lord Jesus Christ as we bear our resurrection bodies. But we should set our hope on that. I know we use a Christmas tree during this season, and I know the Christmas tree is controversial, so let's just lay that all aside for a moment. Let's just lay that aside, okay? And let's just think about the Christmas tree. And what is the Christmas tree? Well, it's this one main stalk in the middle, okay? The log, so to speak, the Yule log. And out of it comes all these branches. Now, that core, that anchor to the entire tree, could be viewed as this past hope, the resurrection of Jesus, and the future hope of his soon return and our resurrection. So view that as the hope that we need to be grounded in. And if we're grounded in that, we literally have the tree of life, which is Jesus. Now, from that, you can hang all of the conditional and unconditional promises of God, past, present, and future. You know, there's a lot in the Bible. I think Pastor Todd said last week that there's like 7,000 plus promises found in the Bible, conditional and unconditional, but both are certain. So what's a conditional promise? Well, conditional promises do this, and this will follow. One of them, it would be the whole parable of reaping what you sow. So if you reap bad, that implies you sowed bad. If you sow good, it implies you're going to reap good. So that's conditional promise. Now, an unconditional promise is that regardless of where you may be as a believer, Jesus will never abandon you, nor will he forsake you. That's an unconditional promise. And all of these promises hang off that main trunk of the tree. Now, when we start to populate our hope, that element in our makeup, in our soul, with that fruit of the Spirit, which is this hope in those two things, the past resurrection of Jesus and the promise of his soon return, we have all sorts of good things start to happen. And that gives beauty to this tree of life. Now, for the hope to be certain, we have to remain focused on Jesus. Okay? Verse 13, wherefore, gird up the loins of your mind, be sober, and hope to the end for the grace that is to be brought unto you at the revelation of Jesus Christ. So, folks, it's all about Jesus. And then in Hebrews chapter 6, verse 17, the Bible reads, wherein God willingly more abundantly to show unto the heirs of promise the immutability of his counsel, confirmed it by an oath, that by two immutable things, in which it was impossible for God to lie, we might have a strong consolation, who have fled for refuge to lay hold upon the hope set before us, which hope we have as an anchor of the soul, both sure and steadfast, which entereth into that within the veil, whither the forerunner is for us entered, even Jesus, made an high priest for every after the order of Melchizedek. So again, Jesus is our hope anchor. And folks, if you stay grounded in Jesus, if you look up to Jesus, if you live for Jesus, you're going to have a hope that is not defiled. You're going to have a hope that's not deferred. You're going to have a hope that keeps your heart from growing weary in the midst of all of this craziness. Now, where are the best places in the Bible to find hope or to amplify hope? Well, one of the best, and I'm going to wrap up this message with this, is one simple chapter from the Bible, Psalm 23. I call it the hope chapter. It's packed with more promises and will energize you with more supernatural hope than just about any other part of the Bible. So I encourage you to not only read this passage, very short, 6 verses, but memorize it. I'm going to wrap it up by just reading Psalm 23. The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. He maketh me lie down in green pastures. He leadeth me beside still waters. He restores my soul. He leadeth me in the paths of righteousness for his namesake. Yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for thou art thy rod and thy staff, they comfort me. Thou preparest the table before me in the presence of mine enemies. Thou anointest my head with oil. My cup runneth over. Surely goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life, and I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever. Now I'm telling you, folks, grab on to that. Memorize it. Bury it in your soul because it's packed full of God's promises. And when you do, your hope will remain strong. And then you can stand up in this fight for freedom. You can stand up in this fight for truth. And you can embrace those words that Winston Churchill said when he said, never give in, never, no, never.
Never give in. Never give in. Never, never, never. In nothing, great or small, large or petty, never give in. Except to convictions of honor and good sense. Never yield to force. Never yield to the apparently overwhelming might of the enemy.
And remember, folks, that same power, that very same power, the Holy Spirit of God, the third person of the Holy Trinity, that same spirit lives in you and me. So let's lift our hands up with Jeremy Camp and praise the Lord.
We're living in a very defining time in our generation, where fear is creeping in and the uncertainty of the unknown is everywhere.
I can see what is raging at my feet. I can feel the breath of those surrounding me. I can hear the sound of nations rising up. We will not be overtaken. We will not be overcome. I can walk.
There's an urgency like never before in my heart to proclaim the good news of Jesus Christ. To show a world that looks like there is no hope, that in Jesus alone you will find that hope and peace. To stand up in the midst of adversity and tribulation, and to show the unconditional love of our Savior while not shying away from speaking the truth of God's Word. Cry out for change in our world, but many times we are left asking, how can I make a difference? What do I do next? The truth is, we can do nothing. In our own strength and our own power, we will fail. But Jesus himself said to the disciples, I leave with you my spirit. In Romans 8:11 it says, if the spirit of him who raised Jesus from the dead dwells in you, will also give life to your mortal bodies through his spirit who dwells in you. Let's step out in his power. Let's proclaim the name of Jesus in boldness and love. And when the attacks come from all sides, walk in the understanding that greater is he that is in us than he that is in the world, because the enemy has been defeated and his victory is in Jesus.